Now we're going to talk about the rights and obligation of the members. In 4.1, it says that the members are all going to be identified in Schedule B. Now, you might note that we haven't had a Schedule A yet, and I've kind of left that for a reason. It doesn't really matter what you call the schedule. We're going to go to the back, and we're going to look for something that says Schedule B, or Schedule Green Shoes, or Schedule whatever it is. Usually, you're going to clean up your operating agreement and have Schedule A come first, then Schedule B, so that everything's nice and pretty. But I left it this way to make a point. Go ahead, let's flip to the back and find Schedule B. Now, note that you may be the only member that's listed there. You need to keep Schedule B updated. If we get a new member, we need to make out a new Schedule B. Make sure you keep track of every instance in the ledger. There's a good ledger in my LLC Wizard course. You can print it out. Everything is there in electronic format. And then you're going to actually issue the membership certificate. Put the ledger in your book, issue the certificates, and you can do what needs to be done in order to maintain your asset protection shield. Because the membership certificates are so important, I've included one at the end of your operating agreement here for you. You're listing each of the members, so that's going to bring up the issue, do I want a multiple member LLC or a single member LLC, or does it make any difference? Makes a big difference if you're in a couple of states. I'll just tell you that the trend is towards multiple member LLCs. But in 47 of the states, right now, you're just fine with a single member LLC. But you need to watch the trend, understand what it is, so that you can see if it's coming in your direction, in which case you're going to add another member. The question is, how much do they have to own and all of that sort of stuff. 4.2 is the limited liability provision. Now, when you put this provision in your operating agreement, you are choosing one of the four elements. And this is the one you'll want to choose. Everybody's going to do this one. I mean, it's a no-brainer to get the corporate shield. And by the way, which corporate shield is better? The LLC corporate shield or the corporation's corporate shield? In fact, which one's better, the C corporation or the S corporation and their corporate shield? Better watch it. It's a trick question. They're all identical. The corporate shield is the corporate shield is the corporate shield. It doesn't matter if it's structured under an LLC or a C corporation or an S corporation. And by the way, I might point out to you, a corporation is a corporation is a corporation. A S corporation and a C corporation are identical. The only difference is one is taxed under subchapter S of the IRS code, and one is taxed under chapter C of the IRS code. Okay, let's see if you're catching on. I have my LLC. I'm going to elect to be taxed as a disregarded entity. You're going to elect to be taxed as a disregarded entity or a C corporation, and the LLC can be taxed just like a C corporation. Which one, the disregarded entity, sole proprietorship, or the C corporation has the best corporate shield? And the answer is they're identical. The taxation of the structure makes no difference when it comes to asset protection. It's the same. And that's actually a hard concept for most people to unwind and figure out, but you now understand it. Now, just because we state here that we get the liability protection doesn't mean that we actually get it. When you get sued, you have to follow the formalities in order to be able to go to the judge and say, look, judge, I've done everything that the law requires me to do. I need you to uphold this limited liability protection, the corporate shield. Now, we've talked about it, and I understand some state laws say that you don't have to do all these formalities, but the fact of the matter is the judge is still going to hold you to the bar in order to prove that this is a real company and not just your alter ego. Now, I want to make one more point. And that is, this is not the charging order protection. This is the corporate shield. The corporation does not have the charging order protection. That's what you get out of the LLC that actually, in many senses, gives it a much higher liability protection shield for you than the corporation itself. And you've been able to see in the operating agreement how we're going along and we're beefing up this charging order protection by adding little provisions, half sentences here and there in our operating agreement. And by the way, the charging order protection isn't reliant on the formalities like the corporate shield is. You do still actually have to make the formalities to the point where the judge doesn't set aside your whole company as a sham, an alter ego. So the formalities are important always, but there is a little difference between corporate shield and charging order protection. You'll notice that the charging order protection is defined by law, but we can beef it up by writing the operating agreement well. In 4.3, it's going to say that the members aren't liable for the debts of the company, and that's true. Actually, that's a joke if it's your small company, because you are always going to be required to sign personally anytime this company borrows money. And I have to smile at these guys running around saying that, hey, pay us $3,000. We're going to get your company all kinds of credit. Well, unless you're IBM, trust me, boys, you're going to be signing on any major loan or any major credit account that you get, and you're going to be signing personally. What I do want you to do is keep your spouse out of this. The bank, if they're half shrewd, is always going to say, well, where's your wife? Where's your husband? We want them to sign too. And what you say is, oh, we can't do that. Sometimes, more often than not, you can get away with not having the spouse sign. But most spouses sign because they don't know the difference, and the bank says, hey, got to have the spouse sign. There's no argument. Both of you sign. Both of you are now on the hook, which makes it so asset protection becomes a lot harder. Remember that concept of, hey, it's not mine. He's got it. Well, if we've got it, then you can get it by attacking either one of us. 4.4, there are actually two choices in the paragraph here, and we're going to describe what the members have to approve. These approvals all need to be in the minutes. That's how you show what the members approved or disapproved, so we've got to follow that formality. The first choice gives the members more control over the managers. The second would be used when you are a member and a manager. Hey, I'm the same guy. Doesn't make any difference. The second is going to beef up the charging order protection because if a creditor gets a member's interest, the member isn't going to have as much control over the manager. And we don't want the new guy to have any control over the manager because I'm the manager. Moving on to 4.5, the managers are going to keep the books, but the members get to see the books. So we're going to define that. We're going to talk about return of capital in 4.6. This is a big deal. It gets really messy when a company with a half a dozen members goes down. Somebody's always going to try and get the money that's left on the table in preference to the other guys. You need to note that a note has preference over just membership interests. That's an interesting thing. The provision doesn't apply to loans that members have made to the LLC. So that gives you a choice. If the LLC needs more money, am I going to buy more membership interests or am I going to give the company a loan? Very often you want to give the company a loan because you can secure the loan with company assets. That means if the company goes down, you're standing in line above anybody else pretty much. Whereas if you've just bought more membership interests, you're on the bottom of the totem pole. It's the members that get paid last. Note that if you're going to buy more membership interests, then you'd better be getting membership interests back, and the 531, the 831 exchanges come into play. This says that the members have to approve any time that the company borrows. So if you're going to give money to the company as a loan, there'd better be a minute entry, particularly if you're going to try and claim some security on assets of the company and priority in distributions if the company is dissolved. If you're going to loan the company money, I want to see a note. I want to see interest paid. It had better be all chipper chaper. Otherwise, the IRS is going to come back in. And if, for example, it's an S corporation, they're going to unwind your S corporation choice and make you a C corporation, which means you just got screwed on your taxes. So following these little formalities is kind of important. I want to see it in writing, the note, the interest, all the rest of it. In 4.7, it says that if the member does get some sort of a distribution from the company, then they're not liable to pay the money back unless for some reason the state statute requires that. And normally, in a standard distribution where you're not making the company insolvent, that means the liabilities are more than the assets. If the company is insolvent, the distribution pretty much stands and the member gets it. They don't have to ever give it back. 4.8 talks about the member's sale or assignment or exchange of their membership interest. Now, this is a place where we could add another 4 pages to our operating agreement, depending on the specific needs of your business. What rights do the other members have as a first priority to get the sale of the membership interests when one guy wants to get out? 4.9 talks about what happens when a member dies or becomes incompetent. If that's the case, then his executor or his guardian conservator will have the right to deal with the membership interests, vote them, do whatever needs to be done. This is not the continuity of life that we've been talking about. This is just the procedure of what happens to the membership interests. 4.10 simply says that a member can make a loan to the company. Remember, we discussed it might be better to make a loan than just give the company money and get membership interests back in return. Article 5, we're going to talk about meetings of the members. In your articles of organization, you get to decide the when, where, who, what, etc., of what the members meet on, when they do it, how they do it, so on and so forth. 5.1 says you're going to have an annual meeting. And it is kind of cool because you get to dictate when, where, who, and how. In this case, it says it has to be held at least 90 days after the end of the tax year. Now, unless you've chosen to be taxed as a C corporation, the end of the tax year is going to be December 31st. So basically, in the first quarter, you're going to hold your annual meeting. All the other meetings that you're going to hold are called special meetings, and you have to have a majority interest of the capital account in order to call a special meeting. Now, remember, the capital accounts can be different from the membership interests. So we're saying he with the gold gets to make the rules. It's the golden rule. The place of the meeting, it says it's going to be at the standard place of business, unless there's a unanimous approval. You're always going to give notice, and it's going to say where the meeting is going to be held. So if you want your special meeting to be in Vegas so that you can go look at distressed properties in Vegas, that's okay, but you need to make sure that you give all of the notices and that you note that everybody, 100% unanimous, signed off on the location of the meeting. Now, you'd better notice the annual meetings and all of the mundane special meetings, but you'd better do really cross the T's and dot the I's stuff if your meeting is going to be in Vegas or in Hawaii. Otherwise, you're going to get caught, like the government has done in the last years. And the IRS is going to say, nah, you can't do that. But if you plan it right, yeah, you can hold your special meeting pretty much anywhere you want. We have to have some sort of a business purpose for having it there, but hey, we can create a business purpose. If you're the only member, you're the only manager, go ahead, send yourself a letter. Just think of how exciting it is to get mail from somebody you actually like. 5.5 is the meeting of all members, and it's kind of interesting because it says if all the members are there, you and your spouse, then you can hold a meeting at any time and at any place. But it does require consent. That means you've got to have written approval. The approval could be after the fact, but I have to see the writing signed by all of the members. But if you and Sweetie both sign it, you take the minutes at the meeting, then you can basically have a meeting anywhere you want, anytime you want. All you have to do is make a written record. If you're going to have your meeting in Vegas, though, I think I want to see stuff up front. I want to see it be a whole lot more formal. It's going to keep the IRS happier. In fact, this whole corporate shield thing and all of the formalities, they're all window dressing. But the window dressing is important when you're dealing with the IRS, when you're dealing with the courts. The better you make your formalities look, the better off you're going to be if there's a lawsuit or an audit. what the judge is going to do, what the IRS guy is going to do, is basically give your company the smell test. They come in and sniff around and say, yeah, smells like roses, you pass. If it stinks, they'll figure it out, and you lose your tax advantages, you lose your asset protection. Now, I'm going to point out that if your company has a lot of members and unrelated people, and they live all over the United States or all over the world, and you hold your meeting in Orlando, that's going to be a lot cleaner than if it's just you and Sweetie. Me and Sweetie got to have more window dressing. 5-6 is the record date. Basically, it says, when do you count and who do you count as members of your LLC in order to establish the need to give notice for the meetings? Well, we're going to set a time. Now, it could be a 30-day notice. You've got to give notice 30 days prior to the meeting. But in this case, it's just the date of the meeting. Now, with you and Sweetie, that's no big deal. You both know that you're members, and you're both going to get notice. But I want to see in the resolutions, in the minutes, that you've given notice to everybody who was supposed to get one, and it was timely. A quorum is a majority interest. Without a quorum, you have to postpone the meeting. If it's just you and Hubby or Sweetie, yeah, you're going to be a quorum. You have a quorum so you can conduct business. 5.8 talks about how many of the members have to agree. The first choice is a majority. The second choice is unanimous. Some state laws require a majority vote for some issues. But if this is your small company, then you're always going to have a unanimous vote anyway, even if they say it's only a majority vote needed. So note that if you require a unanimous vote, then if somehow somebody gets part of your membership interest, you haven't lost control. And this second choice here is going to help beef up the charging order protection. It's going to give you closer control if somebody tries to come in and take a piece of your membership interest. So you're going to use the first provision in 5.8. If there are a number of independent members, if it's just you and Hubby or Sweetie, then you're going to use the second choice here. 5.9 is the proxies, and it's a pretty self-explanatory provision. You're not going to really care about it unless there are a lot of members in this LLC. Actually, you might note that the number of members that you can have is determined by what tax elections you make and how you're going to have your LLC taxed. That's one of the issues that we go through in Course 3. Actually, the stuff we do in Course 3 is pretty good in the LLC Wizard. If you can't save an extra 10% a year in taxes for your little LLC, then you're not using the LLC Wizard right. There's something wrong. 5.10 is kind of cute. It's the cheat provision. It's the action by members without a meeting. This means that you can take any of the actions authorized for members to take without having a meeting. Just write it up, what you approve, what you decide, and then have each one of the members sign it. Then give the consent or the memo to the manager, that's going to be you, and make sure it gets in the minute books. 5.11 is waiver of notice. And I'm weaseling here. Remember when we said that you had to give everybody notice and send it out in the mail and all of that sort of stuff? Well, you can dispense with all of that if each one of the members signs a piece of paper which says that they waive notice. And that's what you're going to do rather than actually send it out. Now, if there really is any question, yeah, go ahead and send it out. But if it's you, you can sign the waiver of notice, and that tells the judge that you're treating this company as a real thing and that you knew about the meeting, but you knew about it wearing your member hat or your manager hat, and so the meeting was properly called. You're going to put the waiver of notice in the minute book, and that will act as the proof that you called the meeting properly. In fact, you can even put the waiver as part of the actual meeting minutes as long as each one of the members sign the minutes. Well, if you're the member, you and Sweetie, you and Hubby, then you both sign, and you've got it there as just part of the minutes, not even a separate document. There are lots of little tricks like this for the administration of your LLC that you can do in order to streamline these formalities. This is part of what I include in Course 5 of my LLC Wizard. If I'm going to give you a system Yeah, you ought to be able to do it in 2 hours a year. It's not a big deal. But you've got to make sure that you cross all the T's and dot all the I's, or when there is a problem, you can be in trouble. You either follow the formalities or the judge says, hey, look, buddy, you didn't do what the law requires you to do to have the corporation, the LLC. I can't use the law to protect you, and he pierces the corporate veil. And we've talked that the corporate veil for the LLC and the corporate veil for the corporation are the same. That's why the LLC Wizard is actually an excellent course, even if you don't have an LLC and you have a corporation, because it goes through step by step how to do the stuff that's required, and it's a big overlap between the LLCs and the corporations.